another episode of the Detox Podcast, a culture and conversation podcast where you can detox from the world around you, get a window into how other people live their lives. Come detox with Detox. I'm your host, Joe Sean. On today's episode, I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to Dave Roman, author and illustrator of Unicorn Boy. And I just got to say, this book, Unicorn Boy, is fabulous. It is incredible. It is magical. There's so many wonderful things in this book that we get into in the podcast. But before I do, I want to let you know a little bit about Dave. Dave Roman is the author-illustrator of the Astronaut Academy series. He's worked as a writer on the graphic novel Teen Boat, The Race for Boatlantis with John Patrick Sheen, and as an illustrator for Goosebumps Graphics' Slappy's Tales of Horror with R.L. Stine. Dave teaches at the School of Visual Arts, is a former editor at Nickelodeon Magazine, and is currently the series editor for First, Seconds, History Comics graphic novels. He draws a webcomic called Pup and Duck, lives in New York City, and is always on the lookout for the perfect waffle. Easy for me to say. Waffle. You can find Dave online at yaytime.com, youtube.com/Dave Roman, and on Instagram at yaytime. Dave's fantastic. And a little bit about the book Unicorn Boy. Growing up is hard. Figuring out where to sit at lunch, juggling homework with sports band musical practice, handling changing friendships. Now imagine going through all of that, but you're also growing a unicorn horn. Unicorn Boy is where you'll meet unassuming Brian Reyes, who happens to be sporting a shining, singing unicorn horn on top of his head, an unexpected sidekick, a talking breakfast muffin, and a charming black cat who wanders the neighborhood handing out business cards. Within Unicorn Boy, Brian and his friends go on a magical quest to retrieve someone that is very special to Brian, who he hopes never loses again. Dave has done a fantastic job charting out this book, and I know you're going to really enjoy what they put together. Before we do, I want to let you know that today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Empire Toys. Nostalgia is something everyone loves, and Empire Toys in Keller, Texas is on nostalgia overload. With toys and action figures from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and today, Empire Toys is a one-stop shop for a trip down memory lane and a chance to reclaim what was once yours, but likely sold at a garage sale. Check out Empire Toys on Facebook, Instagram, or at TheEmpireToys.com. And by Self Unbound. Your quality of life, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, is a direct reflection of the level of abundant energy, ease, and connection your nervous system has to experience your life. At Self Unbound, your nervous system takes center stage as we help unbind your limited healing potential through network spinal care. Access the first steps to your unbound journey by following us on Facebook, Instagram, or at www.selfunbound.com. Now, without further ado, my interview with Dave Roman is right up after this. Welcome back to the Detox Podcast. With me at this time, I'm very excited to have him on the show for a very specific reason, and it's that your horn can touch the sky. No, David Roman. David, how are you doing today?
Wow, it's my first musical intro. I love it.
Well, for fans of The Office, right, there's a scene where there is a unicorn princess character that Dwight is selling toys of, and Steve Carell's character, Michael Scott, comes in and is like, I love this doll, and he sings the theme song, of which I just did. I won't repeat myself, but that is all I could think of when I first opened your magical book, Unicorn Boy, and I'm excited to dig into it because what I think there's a bunch of really fun things that are happening within the book that I want to cover and get your perspective on. But before we do that, here at the Detox Podcast, we like to invite listeners to sit back and quote-unquote detox from the world around them, get a window into how other people live their lives. And so I like to ask my guests a question right at the top of the show. And David, I'll ask you this one. What are you currently detoxing from?
What am I detoxing from, or what am I trying to detox from?
Your choice.
Perhaps unsuccessfully. I'm hesitant to say something super serious, but I'm going to say,
yeah,
corn. Has anybody said corn yet?
Is no. Do you mean the rock band?
I'm going to commit to that. Food? Oh, no. Oh, my. Oh, I'm sorry, corn. I didn't mean to drag you in like this. You guys didn't ask for that. No, I do mean the is it a vegetable? Yeah, it's technically a vegetable. Yep. Corn. I've kind of gotten into this bad habit of cooking tacos for dinner pretty much every night. So I'm having like corn tortillas, and then like for like snacks, I'm like crunching on like corn chips. And then I'm sure there's corn syrup and things that I'm eating. So I'm just realizing that I'm just overloaded with corn and need to somehow filter this out of my system.
You
Can't
started
be
by
good for you.
right. You started by saying you have this bad habit of making tacos every night. And me being from Texas, I'm like, I don't hear the problem yet. I'm waiting for the problem. But then you talked about the high amounts of corn consumption that you are currently experiencing. That could be a problem after a while, for sure.
You can push it for sure. Like, yeah, like if I was eating just like three little taquitos or something like that, that might be all right. But I am kind of like working my way through like large amounts of tortillas and the crispy shell tacos. Like, you get like a whole box of like crispy and like, you're probably supposed to split that amongst people. I it's like, four people per box or something like that.
I think that's correct because I do get one of those boxes and I do divide it amongst my family of four. So I think you are correct about
Very
the
good.
expected proportions per family. But you know what? We don't judge here at the Detox Podcast. So I say taco it up, but perhaps maybe space it out a bit, right? So there you go. There's a
Yeah,
way.
that's what I'm trying to make it like a treat,
Yeah. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner as opposed to just one meal, right? That's the way to do it. It's your breakfast tacos, your lunch. No. Okay. All right. Well, enough taco talk because this is not taco talk. It's not even Tuesday when we're recording this. Although I guess by the time people are listening to it, we do release on Tuesday. So it could be Taco Tuesday for somebody out there. Feel free to indulge. This took a taco turn, but I would say what I'm
It is
currently detoxing from.
the
It is. So I would say what I am currently detoxing from is I am detoxing from this. This is going to be, I got to think about the right way to say this. I would say it is my historical inability to delegate tasks that I deem to be menial. And I'm using air
podcast.
quotes there. And what I mean, I'll explain. So recently, my family and I, we were doing some spring cleaning. I was cleaning out the garage. We were replanting some flowers, a bunch of different kind of stuff, gardening stuff around the house, right? And so in my mind, I historically have said, I'm going to do all the garage. I'm going to organize things. I'm going to clean it out. I'm going to throw it away. And then I'm going to switch and do all the mulch, do all of this myself. I'm just going to, I would just prefer to do it. And I've realized that one, I'm not young anymore, as much as I would like to think I am. Two, I'm not going to be around forever. And the best way to not be around forever is to continue to do all the things all the time. And the third thing is, if I'm trying to teach my kids good working habits that they can build on, it's best to get them involved younger so they can start building those habits as they get older. So what I've
Didn't you have a guest on your podcast who told you about that? Who
That
wrote a
is
book about
correct. That is absolutely correct. And I am still learning, right? We're still learning here at the Detox Podcast. But yes, I did. And so what I did for this past weekend was I looked for ways in which I could give instructions that were not vague or generic, but were very specific and were very time boxed. Can you pick up all of the leaves in this corner and put them in this bag? Because by the time that I am done pulling this stuff out of the garage, I need to mulch in that area, so it needs to be done by then. Great, they did it. It was done. Wonderful help. They felt included, and then they were done, right? So trying to get out of the habit of feeling like I need to do all of it, or I think what I'm realizing more and more when I'm getting introspective is that I am really almost copping out by doing it myself. And what I mean by that is I am not taking the effort in which to articulate what I need in order to help me, and I'm creating a pattern where there's not sort of a good communication flow between two individuals. So that's, wow. Let me get up off the
Sure.
couch after that lesson,
Well,
and go from there.
if you have kids that are anything like me and my sister, they might do such a bad job that you will ultimately just want to do it yourself.
Who's to say, right? Who's to say? I would say so far, so good, but you never know. Well, so if you're not tacoing and you're not cleaning, let's talk about unicorns. So you wrote and illustrated and drew this beautiful book, illustrated, drew. Yeah. wrote, illustrated this wonderful book, Unicorn Boy, about a boy, Brian Reyes, who sprouts this magical horn and then embarks on this incredible adventure. And I personally could not put it down. My daughter picked it up immediately when she saw it, read it cover to cover, and was hesitant to give it back. And I was like, I need to give it back so I can reference it for the interview tonight. And she was like, but you've already read it. Like I am reading it currently. And I'm like, okay, well I gotta have it back. So I want to start before we get into Unicorn Boy, which released earlier this month in March or last month, if you're listening to this in April. I want to start by talking about your origins as a illustrator, and what were some of your first memories drawing?
Well, yes. I mean, I've been drawing. Unlike most kids, you know, I think most kids do like to draw when they're young. And obviously, if you're, you know, growing up in a single parent house like I was, my mom was at work a lot, so she couldn't be constantly entertaining us. So paper, you know, was the toy of choice. Lots of paper around the house and lots of crayons and pencils. So I grew up with a sister who was 3 years younger. So we both really liked to draw. And we would make like paper crafts and like try to design video games and just anything we could do with paper. We would do it in books. You know, the jump between paper to book is very seamless, right? Like all you need is a staple or some glue or something to bind them together, and then you've got a book. Whereas trying to make paper toys and paper video games and all that kind of, it was like, you know, it was fun, but it wasn't convincing.
Right.
Where the books were, you know, what's the difference? Just the quality, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, so I very young, I can't remember what age, but I started making my own comics. I was making my own magazines and very quickly was sharing them with people. As soon as I realized like my parents had a photocopying machine in the office, I was like, Ma, photocopy this for me. And then eventually started going to like the local library and photocopying stuff there. So drawing and making things was always kind of like connected for me. And I just never stopped. And I think one of the nice things is, you know, if you get the right kind of encouragement as a young person, as I'm sure many people have talked about on a podcast like this, you know, that can really make the difference between whether or not you keep doing it or not. And
yeah.
I'm very lucky that I had supportive parents, I had supportive teachers, I had supportive friends who encouraged me to just keep drawing. Never told me that I should stop, luckily. And then I just managed to convince my parents to let me go to art school. I went to School of Visual Arts in New York City. And by that point I was, you know, all in, right? Like yeah, now yeah. There's now, you know, now you can't stop me. Although art school came very close to getting me to stop trying. just the intimidation of going to like a really amazing art school with some of the best artists in the world was a little bit of a challenge to kind of, you know, to stick with it because it's very quickly like, oh, you know what? Maybe I should study basketball.
Right. Did you find as you were developing your skill set and specifically even getting to art school in New York, how much did you, well, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. Because you have a, let me say it this way, reading Unicorn Boy, you have such a distinct style that I really enjoy looking at. So how did it come about for you to sort of get into, okay, this is the style in which I like to draw, and I'm going to kind of double down in this particular area?
Well, thank you. It evolved. I, you know, going to art school, you do get to experiment with different types of art. And I certainly played with everything from sculpture to photography to stop motion animation. So I wasn't really committed to a style per se. I think I was just trying lots of things. And a lot of my peers were interested in superhero comics and like adventure stories, like, you know, maybe horror comics, things like that. And I dipped my toes into all of that stuff. I tried a little bit of everything. I always gravitated towards cute and kind of simple characters. So on the one hand, I was trying to do like maybe horror action comics, but then I would also want to do something that looked maybe like Garfield or Calvin and Hobbes. So I was always a little, but you know, split, I guess, in that way that I liked different styles and stuff. But going to art school, I have a very vivid memory of a painting class where I had a teacher who gave me a hard time and wasn't impressed by some of the stuff I was doing in the painting class in an attempt. I think I was trying to mimic realism. I think I was trying to do more like fantasy painting.
Yeah.
He teased me. He's like, "Oh, you want to be Frank Frazetta, huh?" And I was like, no, not Frank. I want to be Larry Elmore, the guy who drew the paintings, who painted the covers of the Dragonlance books and all the like Dungeons and Dragon module covers and things like that. And he just laughed and he was just like, you got a long way to go, kid. That's just not going to happen. But we had to keep a sketchbook through class. And in my sketchbooks, I always had doodles. And even like this existed in my tests in like, you know, reading classes and math classes, and I would get in trouble for doodling on all sorts. Always the compulsive doodler. And that he zeroed in on and said, there's an energy and a purity to what you're doing in your little doodles that is not coming through in your finished paintings. And that made me really become introspective and really try to question why that was, because I agreed with him. You know, like I did like my doodles and my sketches more than my finished art. So then it was just a like kind of a arc to try to figure out like how do I could do something that was clean and finished looking, but still felt like it maintained that simplicity of those like rough sketches. And then artists that I was inspired by along the way helped a lot with that as well, because seeing that other people were kind of going in this other direction allowed me to think that like, oh, I could do that too.
I really like the story you just outlined with regards to your teacher zeroing in on the energy within the doodles and encouraging you to take another look or a click down look into that specific area. I think you can take that example for a lot of people and apply it to so many different areas in whatever field of study that they have or whatever type of career path they have with regards to what are you noticing people kind of lean in when they're talking, right? Like, what are they hyped up about or animated about as they're discussing, right? And so I think in a lot of ways that can manifest. And well, I'm even going to pause my thought here because there's another way in which I want to say this. And what I want to say is that I think so often, I'll speak for myself here, I think so often when we're in a career that we should be quote unquote happy with, satisfied with, things are going well, and we're told, okay, the next logical step is this particular rung in the ladder. I need to go after that rung. And you're doing a lot of the right things, but perhaps it's not shining in the way that you would like, because ultimately there's no real like driving force energy behind the pursuit. It's just a pursuit to pursuit. And so what I heard when you were telling the story, it wasn't that you weren't talented in doing these paintings. It was that the wonderful, magical sort of oomph of everything wasn't coming through in the same way that it was coming through in this particular doodles. And then so by zeroing in on that, you're able to manifest something even better than you might have had you gone down this more kind of, not traditional, but this more sort of perfunctory path in producing art. And so I see that a lot with regards to a career path. And what I think is so wonderful is when we can tell people, look, sometimes your careers have seasons. And so you're pursuing this particular career for a season, the season ends, what's exciting, what's interesting, what draws you to something else. And you can explore that for a bit. So I think there's all of that to say, I think there's some wonderful life lessons that folks can take out of that story, because maybe there's their own doodles in their own notebook that they can take another look at and see where might there be some kinetic energy.
And I'll be honest, it's very frustrating. It can be, you know, there's a frustrating process to get to that sort of Zen place, I guess, sure, where you have that self-acceptance. Because in a lot of ways I joke, but there's a truth to it that, you know, the visuals that are in my head are not necessarily what ends up on the page. And, you know, in a perfect world, I would be able to paint like the, you know, the people that I grew up loving. And I, you know, and I think there's an alternate world where I think some people just see with, you know, their heroes, and then they just emulate their heroes, and then that's just the path that they go on. And I think somewhere along the line, I had to kind of like be introspective and like stop trying to copy the people that I was, you know, growing up admiring, and figure out what my thing was, and just, you know, lean into myself more, and just figure out what made me me, like, you know, the get to the meanness of me. And it took a couple of years. Like, it's not like it just happened overnight, but I think I've been very, very fortunate that along the way, people would encourage me. Again, even in my 20s and 30s, when in some ways I was hiding behind other artists because I started focusing more on writing books for other people to illustrate, and I did a lot of collaborations. And I love those projects. But in some ways, you know, I'm sure my therapist would say that I was hiding behind other people, you know, like because I didn't trust myself, or I didn't trust that people would, you know, like my art enough, I guess. But much to my good fortune, people that I did respect and admired along the way would be like, you know, I actually like your drawings and I like those doodles. And again, much like my painting teacher, you know, he was responding positively to something that was very pure me. So once I kind of just doubled down on that and pursued that, luckily it worked out for me. There's a shining star at the end of that road.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to, man, there's just so much goodness right there. I want to move on and talk about Unicorn Boy, and I want to just hover for a moment on the note about you're writing books. You've got several collaboration projects out there, but you're not illustrating the books. Other people are illustrating it. And
Correct.
it's the mindset of, you know, I am making a career out of this. I am, you know, I've made it in whatever degree folks want to designate making it, right? But I'm here, I've got projects I'm putting out. These are going really well. I'm very excited about it. And I'm also not illustrating it. So there's this sort of like safety, using air quotes again, aspect, right? As opposed to feeling like, okay, I'm putting myself fully out there, I'm illustrating it and I'm writing it, and we'll see how people respond to it. I think there's so many times where we can feel like, no, we're out there, we're doing the thing, and then not realizing there's a part of us that we'd like to put out there that we're just kind of like keeping, you know, maybe a little bit covered or hidden in certain ways, in one way or another. I want to dig into Unicorn Boy. So, let me start by asking, what was the inspiration or original idea for Unicorn Boy?
Well, it evolved. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could come at it and sort of tackle it. And I like that. I think that's like one of the things that I like to do with books is kind of make them more than one thing at once. And the origins of Unicorn Boy are simultaneous in that way as well. Because on the one hand, the origin was just a this is just a fun little doodle that I drew of a little kid with a unicorn horn, and it's, you know, and it really just is as simple as that, right? Like sometimes you just draw something and you go, yeah, there's something there. I want to do something with that. But you know, the fact that the book is kind of simultaneously a very basic classic adventure, that even in that was a challenge for me because previously, I'd done these very convoluted books. I did a book series called Astronaut Academy that had like 30 different characters, and there's all this sort of
Jeez.
meta text about how characters are going in and out of stories, and like there's, you know, time travel, and it was so overly complicated. So think there was something really appealing about just following a character and having them go on a like a little quest. And I kind of thought about it like 8-bit video games, like where it's like a side-scrolling adventure where it's like, here's this little kid who's going on an adventure and they've got to save their friend. And don't overcomplicate it. Like, right. Try to keep it simple because I do have a tendency to put hats on top of hats on top of hats.
Right.
I think someone said that about Unicorn Boy. Actually. So clearly I failed, but, you know, since this is a more grown up podcast, which I appreciate,
yeah.
Cause I do a lot of times, like, you know, talking to kids and stuff. I can say a little bit more vulnerably that I grew up as a kid of the 80s in a time where gender, this delineation between content was very strong.
Yeah.
It was very clear which shows were for boys and which shows were for girls. And they, you know, everything about them told you as such,
yeah.
Right? And yet I, as you know, I certainly didn't know what terms I would qualify me. This is a pre-pronoun world.
Sure.
I just knew that I really gravitated to both sides equally. Like, I loved My Little Pony, Strawberry Shortcake, Rainbow Bright. One of my favorite shows to this day is Gem and the Holograms. And then would just switch to Transformers and G.I. Joe and He-Man, which is like so alpha male.
Right.
you know, sort of like, you know, just to flip between those two so fluidly, I guess, is the best way to describe it. You know, like, that's so core to who I am. And that's so core to like how I grew up.
Yeah.
And I always really responded to kids who could fearlessly kind of celebrate, you know, kind of what would be considered like gender stereotypes equally, right? So like the kid who's like dressed as like Batman, but it's Batman with like a ballerina tutu.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the mighty Thor, but, you know, they also have like princess hair or something like that.
Right.
So I think in some ways I knew that if I was going to do a book about a boy who was a unicorn, it does raise like little flags in the world, because we just, the world that we live in, is going to kind of jump to conclusions. Mm-hmm. So I think I was kind of trying to kind of like, I guess like slip away from those or just kind of like dodge them, if you will.
Sure.
Because I really wanted a book that worked for both. And I wanted a book that worked for everybody. And I wanted to kind of have characters who actually don't even get hung up on that stuff, right? Like, that's kind of like, was kind of one of the early ideas, was that, you know, some people would kind of react a certain way to whether it's, you know, a unicorn or sort of a princess or this kind of thing, but then to have people who are just like total acceptance, like, yeah, without, and not make a big deal about it at all. Like, it's a big deal that he's got a horn coming out of his head, but, the fact that his hair turns pink and then it, you know, becomes this like flowing, you know, these flowing locks, like never once does anyone go, oh, you look a certain way, or, right, you know, you think this, like I wanted to kind of create a world where like none of that stuff matters.
I really want to commend you on that, because that was something that I picked up immediately, right? Was I was texting with a friend of mine earlier today, actually, when I was revisiting the book, and I'll say it this way, right? So, in my role, I would say maybe threefold, as a parent, as someone that works in sort of an inclusion space on an ongoing basis, and then also as someone who's a member of the community, it is something that I kind of, you know, pick up on quite a bit as far as when stories are going one particular way or the other. And I've seen quite a few stories where you have a character, right, who looks more masculine and then perhaps starts looking more feminine. And then there's comments around the appearance. And I was prepping for that. And the fact that there weren't, like, the comments were around, why do you have a horn on your head? Can it get sawed off? Can we take it off? I have this, you know, was it machete or the
magic blade.
Yes. The
magic katana blade.
Yeah, that's it. The magic katana blade. I can cut it off. Like, that's that as it should be, that is the focal point of everybody's conversation. And I also love, this is what I was texting with my friend about, is Unicorn Boy's friend Avery, right? They are, they use they, them pronouns. And that is the most sort of non-binary representation that exists within the book is the usage of they/them pronouns. And I loved the, and if I say this too clunky, feel free to correct me. I love the low key. No, I specifically texted my friend. I said I love the NBD NB representation, right? The no big deal, low key non-binary representation that fully exists. There's no commentary. They use they/them pronouns, and the story goes on. Because that's how much representation we need for our kids, next generation, for ourselves to be able to see reflected back at us, is the seamless way in which these norms are being upended and are fully baked into the story in a way that is not about that particular identity or that particular orientation. It is just, here is the character, this is the quest that they're going on. And it is incredible to have such a wonderful story where those themes are present, and they are part, right? We talked about Brian looking more masculine in one particular area, looking more feminine in another particular area. And it's not, the commentary is not around those looks. And the commentary is not around the pronouns that Avery is using. It is just simply, here's two kids going on a quest. And I love that.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm glad that it reads as such, because it was something that, you know, like when I was working on it, I think I was pretty naive and a little bit innocent, that I was just like, oh, I'm just going to do this, and I'm not really thinking too hard about it. And then, you know, at some point someone says like, oh, should there be an authenticity reader? And then it's like, you know, like, oh, and I was like, oh, you know, like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, maybe, I guess. So yeah, I think, you know, it's, I was thinking recently that I've always had a hard time, like, with hard specificity too. Like, I like stories that you can put yourself into and that you can, like, relate to all of the characters. And, you know, like, there's a reason why the characters are drawn so simply, you know, so that you can identify with them. And so in a lot of ways, like, I don't want to put boxes on people, you know, I don't put people in boxes. I don't want to draw hard lines. I want you to just feel like these are human beings and these are characters that we can relate to, and we can all kind of relate to something about all of them. And that's kind of like the hope. Like, I don't even want to commit to like how old the kids were.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Like, is it middle school? Is it elementary school? Like, yeah. I don't even want to, like, let's, like, you know,
So I think there's a couple things that I really appreciated. We talked about the such kind of a straightforward quest story, right? We talked about the idea of the 8-bit scrolling quest. I was actually thinking about that a lot as I was reading it, and was like, this feels quite a bit like if I'm playing, you know, a Super Mario Brothers or any, you know, specific type of game where I'm going on a quest to rescue somebody and then the game is over, that type of thing. Awesome. But the magical cat that exists within the book, I'm a sucker. I had a black cat for a long time that I loved dearly, and he passed away several years ago. And we called and we named him Merlin because we felt like he was magical. He's a magical cat.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so, you know, anytime that there's a black cat within the story, and the black cat is utilized as a you know, a humor component, I'm all in. So I want to ask about your creative process as you're designing these characters and designing the world. So there's a couple specifics that I'm choosing not to go deep into because I don't want to give anything away on the book. But as you're designing the characters that exist in this world, what are some of the considerations you're thinking of as far as the idea to bring a black cat in as one of the quest characters for Brian?
I honestly feel like most of my ideas are just stealing things from other franchises that I, you know, that were meaningful to me growing up. But then sort of like they just kind of get mashed up. It's almost like a game of telephone where it's like, you know, in my head, I'm just telling you the story that I've already heard. Yeah. But by the time I tell it, it's like, was it? Like, is that the story? I don't know anymore. It's kind of gone off the rails a little bit. So I'm sure there's more to it, but in my head, my memory was that, you know, so Sailor Moon was a big inspiration, obviously.
Sure. Like
the magical girl tropes are real in this book.
Yeah.
And in Sailor Moon, there was a talking cat that Bunny befriends and is kind of the mentor figure in some way. So I knew that there would be some sort of animal familiar of some sort, and a cat seemed like that made sense. But then increasingly, as I started realizing this was going to be this adventure into the underworld, that really became like more like obvious that it's like, well, to me, you know, there's just that history of black cats being associated with witches,
right,
and sort of the way in which, you know, like they kind of, like what I love about cats is that like cats kind of come and go, right? So like, even though like I worked on a book about the science of cats, and you know, one of the things they talk about is like, it's like they're not really domesticated. Like they're choosing to be with you, right?
Yes.
So it's a choice. So everything in my books tend to like, it all goes filters through like a theme, right? And like choice is part of that, right? So it's like this idea that cats can kind of like, are they in the underworld or in the overworld?
Right.
They're like, we're in both, baby. Like, you know, we switch between, you know, both. And in the same way that like a non-binary character is like, I don't want to commit to a specific gender conformity.
Right.
So like, to me, cats just like fit into that same kind of mindset. And the fact that Unicorn Boy would need someone to help him, like escort him to get into this like, you know, secret underworld. I just love the idea that it would be a black cat.
I agree. And I realize we've been talking about the book without level setting. So for those that don't know, Unicorn Boy is about this boy, Brian Reyes, who sprouts a magical unicorn horn. Yeah. Say that five times fast on his head one day. And everyone is amazed and curious and wondering how that happened. And a series of events happens where Brian has to go into the underworld in order to retrieve someone very special to him, and then magic ensues. Literal magic ensues. So that's the most that you're going to get from me about the book. David, what are some other things that you really want people to know? Well, I'll ask this in a minute. There's a couple things that I enjoyed quite a bit. There's a lot of some of the imagery reminded me a little bit of Coco and the story of the boy kind of in the underworld and communicating
with
friends and trying to get something to get something out of it in order to get back to the overworld by a certain period of time. Were there specific themes and other stories that you were researching as you were drawing the story and getting inspiration from in order to script out certain elements of the underworld? Or were you, again, kind of pulling from, you know, things you had seen or inspirations you had had previously?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely influences. So usually my influences are very pop culture based, but in this case, the story of Orpheus and Eurydice in Greek mythology is obviously very much the model for what's happening here. Although, and there's other versions, I think, like other drafts where it would have been even more so. But this idea that, you know, that there is this underworld and someone has to go into the underworld to sort of like rescue them. And then there's kind of a price to be paid for that. That part, you know, like that for me was like the stakes is something that I really wanted in this book, because even though it's like cute characters and silly fun, I still wanted there to be a sense of stakes so that, you know, so if this idea that like, if you go into the underworld, you can't just like come out.
Right.
Like you will be affected and at best, you know. And so, you know, again, I don't mind spoiling too much because I feel like there's so many twists and turns that it's like, by the time you get there, it's going to be fun. So I was really, I am obsessed with a show called The Storyteller it was a Jim Henson production that originally aired in like the late 80s, and it was narrated by John Hurt, and it's like half hour retellings of fairy tales and fables. And I just love the voice of that show. I love the way they adapt like these really, really ancient stories, but make them feel modern and funny and weird. So I think that was always like my guiding star of like what I would love to be doing if I could be doing anything. And that was one of the biggest inspirations for the series as a whole. In fact, there's one called the Soldier and Death where this guy has to go into the underworld and he captures these demons with like a magic bag. And I just like just the imagery of that and just the sort of iconic nature of it. Like I just love I love subtext and I
Yeah.
love symbolic storytelling. So even though I'm doing like these cute little adventures, I still want there to feel like there's meaning behind everything and that it's something like you said that you can bring into your own life, something that you can relate to, even if you're not a unicorn boy.
Right.
there's still like a there's a reason why these stories are told over and over again.
Yeah.
One of my favorite adaptations of Orpheus and Eurydice is a Broadway show called Hadestown. I am obsessed with that show and the soundtrack and the way that they just sort of they just frame it as like there's a reason why we tell these stories over and over and over again because they're just so relatable and they sort of just speak to the human experience. So I mean that sounds like I'm being deep or something. But it is also based on Super Mario Brothers as well. Yes,
Right.
you're right.
No, but it's so good too. I think what I really like about good literature is, and I would classify Unicorn Boy as good literature, so I'm just going to put that up there, is that it takes these classic themes like Greek tragedies or Greek mythology or what have you, and it feels familiar because often you recognize the beats
Right.
with a new complexity on top of it. And for generations like my kids, this is their first exposure to this particular tale, right? And so then when they go back and they're reading Greek mythology, they're like, that's like Unicorn Boy. Okay, now I understand it and things make sense. And no, we can't all be in the time of the Greeks and be able to see these performances and the opening night of the Athens Coliseum, you know, or whatnot. Most of us have to learn about it through recognizing other ways in which the story has been tweaked to tell something new. And then when you go back, a lot of things start to click and make sense. And for me, that's how my love of theater, my love of literature really blossomed and developed, was finding these stories that connected the dots for me in this particular way. So I love that you have this continual theme through the story. And I gotta say, something that happens at the end, and I won't give this away, but it's not lost on me that you talked about cats being able to sort of go, you know, kind of in between, much like a non-binary person has that ability. And so it's not lost on me sort of some of the beats towards the end of the story and what that looks like and what that means. So I really like that. And people listening are like, I have no idea what he's talking about. What he's talking about. Well, they're going to have to buy the book to be able to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean it sounds like we're talking about some pretty heady stuff, but I you know one of the other influences that I feel like I've forgotten to mention in a couple of times when people have asked, and it really is kind of like the undercurrent of all my work in a lot of ways, is the Bill and Ted movies. I don't know if you ever watched the '80s, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. In a lot of ways, you know, those movies were so influential on me because there is a positivity that runs through those films, and it's easy to dismiss the, you know, the sort of nature of, oh, they're just like two dudes that are kind of going on, you know, silly adventures. But there's a just a purity to the optimism that those characters have and the way that they see the world and the world that they live in a lot of ways. It's all about their friendship. And the lengths that they're willing to go to, because the first movie is basically like one of them is going to get sent away to military academy and their friendship is going to be ruined, you know? And it's like this platonic friendship that just means the world to them. And I always just really resonated with that you could have a story that's driven on the power of friendship and just, you know, that friends mean so much to each other and just the level to which they support each other and are there for each other. And that's, I think, one of the things I was trying to cook in with Unicorn Boy as well is that this is a friendship story about the lengths that people will go to support their friends, defend their friends, and rescue their friends, you know, in times of trouble.
It's really nice to have such a powerful friendship driven story without there being any type of undercurrent of forced romantic like inklings, right? I feel like there's so many times where it's in there in the story, and this time there is such a powerful friendship driven adventure where the particular character is going to great lengths to maintain that friendship and make sure that nothing happens to the friendship. And much like in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which I don't remember the first time I watched it, but I do remember like it just leaving such a powerful positive impression on me and just being like, I don't know if this movie is considered like an all-time like Academy Award classic, but it's an all-time classic for all of these like intangibles with the friendship and the time travel and the characters they meet. Like it's just it's excellent is what it is. There you go.
Got a great right? excellent together.
As we're starting to wrap up, I want to ask you two final questions. So number one, I want to ask you, what are you most proud of putting this book out into the world? And then two, what is one particular thing you want readers to take away after having consumed Unicorn Boy?
Oh, wow. That's those are heavy questions. So, I mean, I guess it speaks to what I was just talking about, like with the Bill and Ted thing. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's like, yeah, there's some, you know, some nice themes in the book and I, you know, like, I don't want to say like, I, you know, don't care if people are moved or not moved or emotional, you know, but I think what really, really matters to me at the end of the day is that they just had a good time mm-hmm. because I think the world is really hard sometimes. I think, you know, we live in crazy times. We live in dark times. And there's something to be said for something that just is escapist and positive. And again, like just having friends who support each other, who love each other, like, you know, like I just, like someone's asked me too, it's like, oh, why are the parents in the book? And I was like, I don't know. Cause it's like nice to have parents that are supportive sometimes,
right.
You know, yeah. like, yeah. you know, like, I don't know, like, it's nice to have one book where they're not orphans. Right. yeah.
We're not telling a Disney story here, right? I mean, yeah. sorry.
yeah, exactly.
I couldn't help myself.
yeah, I know. Yeah, I hate to say, but like, I just hope they're entertained. Like, I just wanted to make something that was really fun and entertaining and makes people kind of forget about bad stuff for a little while and can just be like, what if the world was fun
yeah.
and there was magic?
I love it because when I finished it, I immediately wanted to reread it. And that to me is a sign of a good book, especially a wonderful graphic novel. So thank you for putting this out there. I can't wait. I hope there are many, many more Unicorn Boy adventures because I'm signed me up. Like I'm ready right now to see where Brian is going to go next. So, all right, Dave. And I would say if you are wanting to purchase Unicorn Boy, please, there's a variety of ways in which people can purchase them. And also, if you have the ability, go to your independent bookstore, get Unicorn Boy or ask them to order it and then purchase it from them in order to keep the these local bookstores alive and thriving. Is there another way in which they can, if they don't have maybe access, readily access to an independent bookstore, is there a specific way, David, that you would prefer they purchase the book?
I mean, yeah, independent bookstores is definitely the best. I mean, comic bookstores is what I grew up going to.
Yep.
But your local library is a great option too. Like I feel like that is totally a great place that if you don't even want to spend the money on it, like you can check it out from the library. I grew up hanging out in the library all the time. So yep. I'm a big fan of libraries.
I love yeah. it. Very cool. Well, we are going to shift to a final segment of the show, a segment I like to call Things to Check Out. It is where I provide a recommendation of something to read, watch, and or listen to, and I invite my guests to do the same. So, David, I'll go ahead and go first with some recommendations, and then I'll pass it over to you. So, some things to check out. All right. I was going back and forth on quite a few things. So, from a watching perspective, I am going to recommend folks check out Melissa Joan Hart and Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It's on, I think, Paramount Plus or Hulu or whatever. If you have not watched the TV show of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, I highly recommend it. If for no other reason than there is a magical talking black cat in there named Salem, right. that's the only reason I watched the show. Full stop. I'm there for the animatronic cat who is the sidekick to this teenage witch. My spouse loves Sabrina. And we watch it for Sabrina. And I'm like, okay, can I get more Salem? I need more Salem in my life. This is what I need. So yeah, it's a...
Didn't they cut between like a real cat sometimes and sometimes it's a puppet cat?
Yeah, that's right. And the first season, the animatronic was not as good. And so it like had sharper teeth or sharper ears and it was real like staticky. But you know, I guess you get more of that budget coming in and you can improve the cat. And so the animatronic cat gets better the more the show goes on. But yes, they would have the cat sitting on a table or on a counter talking, laughing, and then he would go to jump down. They'd cut away and then there would be a regular cat running off into another room. And that's how the magic of TV, everybody, magic of TV. So that's something to watch, something to read. I've given recommendations to read Bone Comic. I'm a big fan of that. I also just read, if you like superhero stories, I like Doomsday Clock, which is a mashup of Watchmen and some of the DC characters like Batman and Superman. But my actual like reading recommendation, any Chekhov play, there's a fabulous Chekhov joke in the book that I died laughing. I laughed so hard I couldn't stop. I really, really appreciate a good Chekhov joke. Thank you, David, for putting that in the book. So here's your recommendation, folks. Just go read some Chekhov plays. I don't care. Let's go read Ivanov, perhaps. I don't know. Read whatever, right? It's whatever. And then something to listen to. I know I've put this out on the show before, but I'll go ahead and put it out. If you like certain adventures from podcast form, I'm a big fan of the Batman Adventures. HBO put those out. Their audio, they've got fantastic. Jeffrey Wright plays Batman. It's Jeffrey Wright. It's fantastic. So I'm a Batman fan. So there's some recommendations of things to watch, read, and or listen to. David, what are some recommendations you have for the audience?
A movie that I watched recently that I really, really loved was Marcel the Shell.
Ooh.
That's a like stop motion animated movie that is just really, really sweet and unlike anything else out there. Just really charming and wonderful and uplifting, very soul stirring and introspective, like strangely introspective. As far as comics, I am a big fan of a series called Aster and the Accidental Magic by Tom Pico and Karen Sack. It's actually a French comic series that has been translated and published by Random House in the States. If you like Unicorn Boy, it's definitely up that same alley. Very sweet, very fun, magical, very hilarious at times. And then I should just mention that I also edit a series called History of Comics, and we've done a bunch of great books in that series. And one that I'm especially proud of is called History Comics Hip Hop.
Ooh.
History of Hip Hop from the Bronx across the nation.
That's awesome. I didn't even know that existed. I'll have to go check that out.
Yeah, it's great.
That's incredible. Well, David, if people want to follow you and see what you're up to, what's the best way for them to do that?
I'm on social media mostly as Yay Time, YAYTIME, like daytime, but yay, it's Yay Time.
I have to say, I was a big fan of the fact that on your Instagram, you posted about Land of the Lost, and I have to say, that is a TV show that I forgot that I watched, and it was one of those shows. You know how, like, sometimes as a kid, you have memories of shows that you've watched, and you're like, I don't know the name of it, but there was kids research, like, the kid detectives in a treehouse and they were following up on some crimes and people would look at you like, what are you talking about? Land of the Lost was one of those shows for me where I went, no, it's people and there's dinosaurs and they're like, Jurassic Park? I'm like, no. Dinosaurs the show? No. What's the Land Before Time? No. It had real people and dinosaurs. And they're like, you must be thinking of Jurassic Park. I'm like, I'm not. Land of the Lost, David, you solved for me today decades long mystery I've had in my head. So now I will have to go do some consuming of the Land of the Lost. But yes, Yay Time on social media, YAYTIME. David, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, if you haven't purchased your copy of Unicorn Boy, you can go ahead and do it now. The show is over. You can purchase 5 for you, 5 for a friend, distribute to local libraries, your choice. But David, like I said, thank you for being on the show. And listeners, you've been detoxing with Detox. Now go and make a more inclusive world.
If you know of an interesting person or story that needs to be told, please reach out to me at detoxpodcast@gmail.com. That's detalkspodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach out via Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Detox Podcast, or visit detoxpodcast.com. Also, be sure to leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you like the show. It only takes a few seconds and it really helps us out. Link is in the show notes. Finally, thanks for listening. Please come back next week when we'll have another interesting conversation. And special thanks to my producers, Ben Lawant and Galan Aldaco. Without your help and support, this show wouldn't be possible. Thanks so much, guys.
Detox is a production of Vocal. For more information and more programming, please visit vocalnow.com. That's VOKALnow.com.